hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That, whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security.
People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Motherhood, apple pie, hot dogs, fireworks, and baseball is what many people think about on the 4th of July. But July 4th is the anniversary of a revolution, the American Revolution. On this special two-part edition of PTR, we look at that American Revolution and what it means for us today here in the United States with writer and historian Chris Mann. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Chris Mann is a people's historian who writes and lectures on American history. On this special edition of PTR, we look at the American Revolution and how that revolution has shaped our country's history and what it means for the struggles of working and poor people in the United States today. This is part two of our two-part presentation.
If we look at the situation today, I think one of the things that's striking is how much of the government and of society is structured around just keeping a tiny handful of people in control, keeping the great majority of people who don't have control from doing things that the tiny handful doesn't want to have done. And this includes things like the police forces, the government, all sorts of things like this, where the whole society is about stopping people. So if we had a situation where you had the majority of people in control, I think it would be possible to have a situation where you could produce the material needs that people need. I mean, whether it's things like food or housing, I mean, clothing, things like that. And then once that, I mean, if the purpose of the society isn't to guarantee that someone makes a profit, you know, that someone becomes a millionaire or billionaire, and that they then maintain control of the society, but just guarantees that people are at the very minimum fed, housed, and clothed, then that can be done relatively simply. I mean, you can figure out how many houses need to be built and how much clothing needs to be produced and produce it. And then the question becomes, the things in addition to that, which are also part of the basic necessities of life. Education, certainly, cultural development, spiritual development, the guaranteeing of a clean environment and the preserving of the earth, these kind of things. I think one of the things that we see from the experience of the American Revolution of the 1770s and even from the Civil War era is a situation where once the old world is gotten rid of, there's always this tremendous leap forward in the development of the society. I mean, you look at the eastern seaboard of North America before the American Revolution. It was this area that was just controlled by the British government and kept down, and everything was about you had to trade in a certain way so that it led to profit on the part of the British government. Everything had to go through England or be approved by England. And there were these tremendous restraints on the economic development. Once the British connection is broken, then you have this tremendous expansion of the economy. Now there's an ugly side to that, in the sense that the economic expansion led to the, you know, physical expansion westward with the killing of the Indians and the development of a capitalist United States, with the very ugly side of that. But there was this tremendous economic expansion. Same thing is true after the Civil War, where once the power of the slave owners in this country is broken, and broken decisively, you have a situation where you have this leap forward in industrial development, where a society that was trying to become industrial but constantly being pulled back is just leaps forward. And within 5-10 years after the Civil War, you have this tremendous development of industrialization and urbanization, and Chicago becomes the fastest growing city in the world, and there are railroads that stretch from one end of the country to another, and steel begins to be produced on the Mesabi Iron Range, and it's just, I mean, it's incredible how fast a development there was. Now, and that's within the context of a capitalist society, and both of those tremendous expansions have an ugly side to them. But I think the question for us is, if society can change that much within the confines of capitalism by getting rid of the political control of certain kinds of capitalists, certain kinds of exploiters, what if we could eliminate the rule of exploiters entirely? What kind of tremendous leap forward would there be in terms of what human beings can do, even what they can imagine? Because part of the problem is a problem of just people don't. When people live in a society where every one of their good instincts is just crushed, and they're forced to almost accept a morality of dog eat dog just to survive, that's such an incredible drain on the society, that it's difficult to even imagine how different society could be if that drain was eliminated.
People often look at the 1960s and to some degree the early 70s as a very revolutionary period in American history.
Certainly if you look at the whole period of the 1960s, I think it very much rested on the moral authority of the best in the American Revolution. Martin Luther King consistently said that all we are asking that the United States do is live up to its promises, that it live up to the principle of all men are created equal that's in the Declaration of Independence. And I think the women's movement was fighting, just as the first wave of the women's movement fought in the 1840s, to include within that statement women.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. All right.
No,
the first wave of feminism fought to include in the statement all men are created equal women. And in fact, as I mentioned before, it declared at Seneca Falls, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal. So one side of the movement of the 1960s was resting on that moral authority and was very, very important. I think if you look at the whole period of the 1960s, it was a very important period of time where people who are oppressed peoples were fighting for their liberation. And the oppressed sex, the oppressed nationalities, the oppressed age, because there is a real oppression of youth in society, all those groups were waging a very important and legitimate fight for their liberation, and they were hearkening back to and invoking the moral authority of the storming of the Bastille and of the Boston Tea Party and of the Women's Rights Convention at Seneca Falls and all of that political motion. Now, I think what we're seeing today in society is a situation where we're beginning to see not a shift in society where the main form of the fight for change isn't the oppressed peoples against oppressor peoples, but the new class fighting against the exploiting class and the privileged class in society. And so it's a change in the form of political struggle that I think is very, very significant. Now, at the same time, this is taking place inside a society, and people are invoking the past just as they did in previous periods. I think we have if you look at like a Los Angeles rebellion, and you see young people in the streets after the verdict in Simi Valley that exonerates the killers of Rodney King, you can't help but notice after that the statement in the Declaration of Independence that condemns George III for allowing people to escape, the murderers of young men in Boston to escape because of a mock trial. So I think that we're seeing something that invokes the past, but is also in many ways something qualitatively new. It represents and kind of, in a sense, continues the political motion of the very poorest part of the social forces that made up the American Revolution and the French Revolution and other revolutions. But the thing that's unique, I think, about today is that this time, I mean, in these other revolutions, for instance, in the American Revolution, there were many different classes and class forces which, for different reasons, wanted to get rid of British rule in North America. And so what you had was a situation where people from a lot of different classes can unite on one goal, at least temporarily. And ultimately what happened is the richest, most influential forces gained the political upper hand. I mean, this happened too in the French Revolution and has happened in other revolutions. But the thing that's unique about today, I think, is that the new productive forces and the new economic reality is creating a situation where there are going to be so many people from this very poor section of society that even if other social forces are involved in the revolutionary process, that it's going to be very difficult for them to gain the upper hand, provided there's political leadership for the poorest section of society, and ultimately the demands of this new class of poor people are going to have to be heard. And that's going to make the revolution, I think, this revolution different than any other revolution in human history. And I think this time what we're really going to be able to do is Thomas Paine's statement, you know, we hold in our hands the power to make the world over again, is really going to be true. I mean, in a certain sense, that was true for Thomas Paine's time, and they did, in a sense, make the world over again by eliminating monarchism. But they didn't make it over as much as some of us would have liked or we can today. So I think that there are some tremendous dissimilarities, good dissimilarities, today, where we'll be able to accomplish more.
many people don't or choose not to see the inequities that are growing here in the United States. For those people who do, however, what actions can they take?
The key lesson of the American Revolution of the 1770s for people who feel that way is to understand the tremendous importance of introducing new ideas into society. If you look at the American Revolution, there was the slow development of a contradiction between the 13 colonies and the British government. There was a lot of low-level struggle that dragged on for years, but for a long time, people were not clear. People did not have a vision of a new society. They did not have hope. They did not think it was possible to completely transform the society. And then at a certain point, people stepped forward and they introduced new ideas into society. And this was particularly the role that the pamphlet Common Sense and that Thomas Paine played. Thomas Paine wrote this pamphlet and he told people, as I've said, we have the power to make the world over again. The birthday of a new world is at hand. King George is the royal brute. He's not somebody that we have to respect. We could have a completely new society if we just get rid of monarchism. Well, we have to do something like that today. And that, once he wrote that pamphlet, once that pamphlet was written in simple, clear language, once it was distributed far and wide in the 13 colonies, it had this tremendous effect. It changed everything. People knew what they had to do, so they made the complete break with Britain. Without the publication of Common Sense, you would not have had the Declaration of Independence of the United States. So I think for us today, the thing we have to do is those of us who care, we've got to do the political equivalent of writing and distributing Common Sense. And that, I think, means producing programs like this one. It means writing letters to the editor of your newspaper. It means supporting revolutionary newspapers like the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. It means distributing those publications. It means studying, forming a discussion group with your friends and your college classmates to talk about politics. It means all different sorts of things like that. And if we can develop some simple material, as simple and common sense-like as the pamphlet Common Sense was, and just say to the American people, we don't have to live in a society run by a handful of billionaires. Let's take control of this society. That will be a tremendous step forward in terms of changing the thinking of the American people. I think we need to go far and wide, and we need to say to people, why is the country which would not allow a tax on its tea allowing, for the most part, with a few honorable exceptions, but for the most part, allowing arsenic in its drinking water? How dare we allow that to continue? We're better than that. We took control of the society from King George III. We can take it from control of it from a few handful of billionaires. So if we can develop things to make people think, things to agitate them, to shake them up, pamphlets, books, newspapers, organizations such as the League of Revolutionaries for New America, which I'm a member of and which I urge people to join. I think in this way we can continue the best in the American revolutionary tradition and we can effect a change in this country.
Chris Mahan, people's historian, lecturer, and writer on the 4th of July and the American Revolution. We'll be right back. As we say on every PTR program, People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper, People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Chris Mahon, who has just done our two-part series on the 4th of July and the American Revolution, writes frequently for People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo, and we asked Chris to try and explain to our listeners what that bilingual newspaper is about.
The People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo, is a newspaper, a national newspaper published in Chicago by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. It's published in English and Spanish, comes out once a month, and it has articles from all over the United States about the current situation, what people can do to change it, different practical fights that people are involved in. But in the main, it's about what's happening today and what's causing the problems and what we can do, and tries to do what we've been talking about in this program, that is, introduce new ideas, and particularly the idea that we don't have to live this way. I mean, it tries to cite examples of how the tiny handful of rulers in this country are really just unfit to rule. That's really the newspaper's mission. And so we have articles about very, very current events that may have happened a few days before the publication date. And we also have articles about the history of the United States, because one of the things that we see is that we have a ruling class in this country that is constantly miseducating people. It constantly interprets current events from a certain perspective. It interprets the history of the world and the history of this country from a certain perspective, or it basically tries to tell people that capitalism is the greatest thing that's ever existed in the history of the world. It's really the natural state of affairs and the only possible system, and it's, according to them, justified. So what we try to do is show really the opposite of that. And that's, I think, the importance of some of the articles about history, that we try and show the role of the poor in history, the fact that that this country was born in revolution, that there has consistently been a fight of the poor section of the population to demand things from the tiny handful of exploiters. And so I've written some of the articles that have appeared on those subjects. The organization that produces the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo, is the League of Revolutionaries for New America. We have articles from the League and from other people as well, but the League was founded in 1993, and it's an organization of revolutionaries, and its purpose is collectively to introduce these new ideas into society, to gather the revolutionaries together and to be a place where they can collectivize their activity and plan out how to influence society and how to change the terms of the political debate in this country, and to collectively be sort of like what Thomas Paine did and the pamphlet Common Sense did during the American Revolution of the 1770s, or like what the abolitionist movement did in the pre-Civil War era. I mean, if you look at the period of history before the Civil War, there were concerned people that saw that slavery had to be abolished. They gathered together and created certain organizations, first regional and then national organizations. They developed plans of agitation. They developed newspapers to agitate. They developed a corps of public speakers who went around and spoke against slavery all over the country. And they got involved in the day-to-day fights that intersected with the whole question of slavery, whether it was to protect runaway slaves in the North or whatever, and they used those to try and rouse the conscience of the country. I mean, that's basically what we're trying to do today around the existence of this class of millionaires and billionaires and this tremendous injustice around that. So certainly anyone who'd like to join the organization is more than welcome.
And how can we get in touch with the organization?
Well, you can call our national office, and we have an 800 number. That's 1-800-691-6888. or we have a website, which if you go to www.lrna.org, you'll find our website. Or they can write to us at Post Office Box 477-113, Chicago, Illinois, 60647.
That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Thanks to the overwhelming response to PTR in our first year, the program is now available twice monthly and on the internet at www.ptradio.org. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies of robotics and computerization that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide is used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, or our other print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. My name's Mike Thornton. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.